Constant Wonder Kids is a Constant Wonder podcast.
Hi, Wonder Kids. It's Paige. Do you remember your most recent dream? Was it funny or scary? Did something strange happen, or was it just an ordinary day? Dreams can be about all sorts of things. For instance, I recently dreamt that I was flying over a mountain range. Talk about wonder. For some people, dreams can be very meaningful, especially when the dreams have to do with things that are happening in their real lives. Today's guest once had a very important dream, and to start off our episode, she's going to tell us all about it.
I had a dream that I went down to a beach, and at this beach, there had just been a big storm, and there was a lot of flotsam and jetsam, like kelp and things that had come up from the very bottom of the sea were strewn along the shoreline. I was really attracted to go poke around in the kelp and see what the storm had pulled up, but I knew there was something I was supposed to see further on down the beach, so I went up over the sand dune, and there was a bay with about 80 orcas. And when I got there, this mother orca had been waiting for me, and she breached. She was just beautiful, kind of shimmering in the sun, and I could have just watched her all day, but she was actually pointing the way for me to go further on down the beach. So I went up over another sand dune, and I came to another bay, and there was a long concrete box on the beach. So I went running down to the box to see what it was, and there was a tiny window along the box. And as I looked in the box, I was kind of horrified to realize that her baby was in the box. And it was so tightly pressed up against the walls of the box and against this window that its skin was pressed right against this window. When I looked the baby in the eye, I was overwhelmed with the despair it was feeling, the sheer fear and terror and despair. And so I woke up and I was crying at having felt what this baby was feeling, and I was completely mystified what the dream meant.
This is Donna Sandstrom. When she had this dream 25 years ago, she was a software developer who had just moved to Seattle. Donna knew about orca whales and thought that they were great, but she wasn't super involved in studying or working with orcas and sea creatures. Even so, her dream about the baby orca separated from her family had a big impact on Donna, and the morning after the dream, she was pulled even further into the world of whales.
That same day in the paper, the Seattle Times published an article saying that SeaWorld had just been granted a permit to capture orcas off the coast of Alaska. So that was the moment everything changed, because the dream was so clear. This mother whale showing me her baby in this concrete box. And then later that same day, reading this announcement about SeaWorld getting a permit to capture 100 orcas off the coast of Alaska, I had no sensitivity to any of those issues prior to that dream. And so I felt like I got a very clear phone call for help, and I decided I had to act on it. I wrote my first letter to the editor of the paper, you know, wondering why orcas were still being captured, and they printed my letter, and when they printed it with a picture of a breaching orca, which was very reminiscent of part of my dream.
After learning that orca whales were in danger of being captured and separated from their families, Donna threw herself into the whale cause. She wrote letters, organized campaigns to protect whales, and learned more about orcas and the way that they relate to one another. Today, we know a lot more about orca whales than we did when Donna was first starting out.
A Canadian researcher figured out how to tell orcas apart from their saddle patches and their dorsal fins.
The dorsal fin is the orca's top fin that can sometimes stick out of the water.
So every orca has a white blotch behind its dorsal fin. It's like a fingerprint on a human. It's unique to those orcas. When they could recognize individuals, then they could recognize that some individuals always were together.
As Donna and other orca fans kept track of the different individual orcas, they realized that orca whale families were super important.
Resident orcas are certainly one of the most tightly bonded family units on Earth. Sons and daughters stay with their mothers their whole lives. They don't break off and form a group of their own. They stay with their mothers, who stays with her mother, who stays with her mother. So in resident orca pods, you can have four, sometimes five generations traveling together.
Orca researchers realized that there were different orca families, or orca pods, swimming along the Pacific coast.
There are three pods that live around the south end of Vancouver Island and along the Pacific coast. They have these long-lived family groups. Their travel patterns are predictable and known generally. And they have dialects. Each pod has a significant call, so that whales share certain calls only with their pods, so you can recognize them by their calls.
Donna and the other whale researchers and activists kept track of these whale families and defended them from threats, whether it be companies who wanted to capture the whales for entertainment or environmental concerns. The whale activists had a good idea of where the whales could be found during different times of the year. Until one day, something strange happened.
It was a quartermaster on the Vashon Ferry who first noticed the whale by herself. The quartermaster called a local researcher, Mark Sears, and Mark Sears also was puzzled because in 40 years of watching whales here, he'd never come across a lone orca, but he went to check it out and confirmed exactly what the quartermaster had reported, that there was a juvenile orca.
Who was this little orca swimming around the ferries just south of Seattle? Mark tried to identify her by looking at her saddle patch. Remember the orca fingerprint we talked about earlier?
On this little whale, her skin was really mottled, so you couldn't see her saddle patch. So it was a mystery, who is this whale? After Mark confirmed that she was out there and that it was impossible to tell who she was, he reached out to researchers all over, and a lot of people came down to try to figure out who this whale was.
These researchers had a lot of questions about this little whale. Who was she? Where was her family? And was she even healthy? It was Mark's job to keep track of the little whale so that all the researchers and veterinarians could take turns checking her out. And luckily, this wasn't too tricky once you knew the whale's favorite toy.
She had this very endearing and turned out to be a very useful habit that she really liked playing with sticks. So Mark actually picked up one of the sticks that she'd been playing with. It was about, I think he says, it was about 6 feet long, a pretty long stick, but he tied it to his boat so that, you know, if there was a researcher or a veterinarian, someone who needed to get a close look, he would pick up that stick and she would see it and come over to the boat.
I think that it's so funny that this whale just loved sticks, kind of like a dog. Donna once got to see this whale play with a stick up close.
Mark would go out every day and just lay eyes on her to see if she was there and if she was doing okay. I went out one day with him just to see where she was and take notes of her behavior and things like that. And yeah, I picked up a stick. It wasn't her big stick. It was just a floating stick, and we hadn't spotted her yet. She spotted us, though, and she came charging towards the boat when I had that stick in my hand.
Soon, the researchers were able to solve the mystery of the orca's identity. Using recordings of the whale's call, they were able to match it to the unique call of one of the pods. They realized the orca's name was Springer and that her mother whale, Sutlej, had recently died. Somehow, Springer had been separated from the rest of her pod, and unfortunately, Springer was also pretty sick.
The biggest and most noticeable thing was her skin condition. It was kind of blotchy. Mark tells it that she was always rubbing up against sticks because it seemed very itchy. It seemed to him like she was always trying to scratch an itch, probably from her skin condition. She was also underweight, not severely, but enough so that it was worrisome. She did have energy, and the most amazing thing is she was capturing fish on her own. Normally, orcas work together to hunt their prey, and they also share their prey. Her mother, at that age, would have been sharing her fish with her, so it was kind of amazing that she was able to hunt on her own. So she was seen hunting. Everyone knew she was catching fish and eating it, but she didn't seem to be getting enough. She was too skinny.
It was amazing that Springer had survived so long without her mother and family, but clearly she needed help. Some people wanted to capture Springer and put her in an aquarium where she could get the care she needed, but never be reunited with her family. Donna did not like that plan.
We strongly advocated that Springer should have a chance to go home, to be reunited with her family. We were wary of any plan that would involve her being sent to an aquarium for either temporary rehabilitation or worse, permanently. When orcas go to aquariums, they don't come out. So we were very worried that she would be sent to an aquarium, and even if the plan was to rehabilitate her and send her back to her pod, that wouldn't actually happen.
Luckily, a compromise was reached. So that Springer could get the care she needed, she would be moved into a temporary sea pen, or fenced-off spot in the ocean where she could be observed and cared for by a veterinarian before being returned to her family. With the help of lots of researchers, Springer was gently caught in a net and guided to the sea pen. After a few months of care, she was as healthy as a young orca should be, just in time to meet up with her pod as they traveled south. The researchers planned on releasing Springer into Johnstone Strait, where her pod was expected to go swimming through. People were excited to see Springer go back into the wild, but they were also worried. Would her pod accept her back into the family after being gone for so long?
Springer's pod showed up faster than anyone would have dreamed. She was returned home at like 5:30, I think, on a Saturday night, and her pod came to get her the next day, or, you know, was in the area the next day by around 2 in the afternoon.
Springer was able to meet up with her family and set off with them on their yearly migration. Even though the researchers were happy for her, they were still a bit worried.
That first winter, her pod left the Johnstone Strait area, as they usually do, and they were somewhere on the BC coast where they wouldn't be observed. And they came back that next year, that next July, almost to the day, on the same day that she had been returned. And that was, I think, we all felt the biggest relief, because it meant she had made it through the winter, she had stayed with her pod, and she was back. And that was the day I think all of us relaxed.
Over the years, Springer continued to travel with her orca family as a strong and healthy whale. She even had 2 baby whales. Each year when Donna gets to see Springer, she's filled with wonder.
I think all of us are glad every year when she is spotted again. We'll never get over that feeling of kind of awe that she has been fully integrated and is thriving, and that she has been able to do this and go on and have calves of her own. For me, what she has done is give me hope, not just for this specific situation, but that nature can heal. That's what gives me hope. Not just for orcas, but for all the problems we face. When we humans put the best interest of the thing we are trying to heal or give a chance to, when we put that first, miracles can happen.
Springer's return is a happy story and an example of how humans can influence animals for good. Donna's love for Springer and all orca whales is inspiring and reminds us of how when we love animals, we can help make the world a better place.
Quick word for you parents, I'm Marcus Smith, host of Constant Wonder, which is the source of material for Constant Wonder Kids. We made this episode because Constant Wonder contains a lot of great stuff kids will love too, but you may be wanting more. We've got a whole episode devoted to Springer and her journey home. If you want to hear the full presentation, go find Constant Wonder wherever you get your podcasts. It's called The Inside Story of How an Orphaned Baby Orca Got Home. We actually think that you'll love more than just one episode of our podcast, which is an ongoing quest to find awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild, vast or small. The kinds of encounters that move us beyond words. Remember when you had time for wonder? Well, we suspect you still do. Subscribe to Constant Wonder on your favorite platform. Constant Wonder Kids was produced by Paige Crumperman-Darrington with sound design by Mitchell Towsley. Tenery Taylor is the executive producer. Constant Wonder Kids is a production of BYU Radio.